Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 183 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Not Senator Mark Schessler's First Recession, about my conversation with the senator from the 9th District of Eastern Washington, an area which includes all or part of six counties, including Adams, Assotin, Franklin, Garfield, Spokane, and Whitman. Schessler, a lifelong Ritzville wheat farmer, was elected to the State House in 1993 and served for 12 years. He was elected to the Washington State Senate in 2004. For many years, he served as Senate Majority Leader under a coalition he helped cobble together. Nearly 3 years ago, I conducted an interview with Schessler from the cab of his combine. Episode 34 was entitled The Many Hats of Mark Schessler and was released August 15, 2017. You can easily find it in the Wheat All About It archive on the Grain Commission's new website at wagrains.org. Also, don't forget, I'm posting bonus episodes on the website each month from the Wheat All About It archive of podcasts. June's bonus episode is entitled Behind the Curtain with Matthew Weaver. Weaver is Eastern Washington's Capital Press reporter, as well as being a produced playwright. Episode 18 was originally released April 25th, 2017. One last note, if you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast on your smartphone. It's fine to listen to episodes at the WGC website, wagrains.org, but it's hard to get into the habit. Subscribing saves you the trouble of having to remember to listen, as podcast alerts are sent directly to your phone. Some of my liberal friends groan when I tell them about my longtime relationship with Mark Schessler. Although he's a conservative Republican, and I'm not, he has never held that against me. In fact, he's one of the few politicians I genuinely like. Even when I was a reporter and interviewed Schessler on some controversial subject or another, he always made an effort to establish a personal connection, and he never barked at me, although I understand he can. After being in agriculture's foxhole for so long, I recognize that political distinctions matter far less than results when the goal is to ensure farmers survive, food is delivered, and research is conducted. Bottom line, I've come to believe there are many roads to Rome when it comes to ensuring food and farmer security. The key, I think, is to work across the aisle and be willing to compromise for the good of agriculture, which, as I like to tell everyone, is the world's only indispensable industry. Just try and eat your smartphone. Go ahead. I run into Senator Schessler a couple of times a year, and it's always nice to see him and his mustache. No flavor of the month politician. You know when Schessler talks about his philosophical approach to politics that he believes what he's saying on a cellular level. Closing in on 30 years in the state legislature, I thought Schessler might be a voice listeners would enjoy listening to directly. From the horse's mouth, don't you know? As a legislator during the recession of 2008 and 2009, this isn't Schessler's first rodeo when it comes to dealing with a steep economic decline. He hasn't just looked at the map, he's been on the ground. We are in the midst of an historic moment in the history of our country, and I don't think anyone can tell whether the worst is over or if we're simply at the end of the beginning. If the worst is over, then I can say this. The worst was pretty bad when it comes to impacting Washington State's economy. Over the next 3 years, revenue is expected to take a $7 billion hit in the state, a number that Schessler doesn't argue with when I ask how the state is going to navigate the treacherous waters ahead.
I think we have a pretty good guess that $7 billion, more or less, will be the number. Generally, in a recession, we see an increase in caseloads, and that will compound the problem.
What does that mean, an increase in caseloads?
Well, when the economy goes down, fewer families homeschool or private school their kids. More families tend to move into a need for social services, and those costs obviously go up, and some are entitlements, and some are things that are nice to be able to do for people.
So you're saying as the economy goes down, the need for government services go up?
Some services, yes, and some economic forces. If you're homeschooling your children and money gets tight, you may put them in public schools. You may be signing up for Medicaid or the HEN program, healthcare essential needs. There's a host of things that can happen in a recession, and we're going to see those. The Office of Financial Management predicted that we have double-digit unemployment for 3 years based on the current course.
My, my. Now, Mark, you've been around state government for a very long time. How do you wring $7 billion out of state spending? I mean, as you mentioned earlier, much of that spending is mandated.
Yes, there is. It sounds really horrible, and it is difficult. Here's what people need to remember. During the Great Recession, we actually had less revenue than we did the prior biennium. After two bienniums of approximately 20% growth, we were to ratchet our spending back down to the 1921 biennium, we would be okay. On one hand, the problem seems incredible. On the other, it seems manageable.
Now, are you saying that it's manageable because you're a conservative and we have the liberals on the other side over here saying, no, we need to spend more, we need to not cut as much?
Well, certainly there's a philosophical divide. Some are not willing to give up any of the increases. I ask my friends and neighbors this. If they're unemployed and their small business is failing, should they pay more taxes so that their neighbors can have a pay increase? I think the answer is we all make some sacrifice and we can get through it. We did it with Governor Locke and Dino Rossi. We did it in 2011, very bipartisan. It can be done, but it is, of course, very challenging.
Mark, I've heard COVID-19 should be compared to a natural disaster rather than an economic calamity. What do you think of that analogy?
I believe there is certainly a need for public health and public health management. Really don't like our inconsistencies and the political games that have occurred so far.
And you're specifically talking about?
Let's take in early the construction industry. It was a government construction job or green energy seed. If you're building private homes, apartments, or other private sector, you had to shut down. Just not in, that's not consistent and that's not fair. Example, you couldn't take your dog to a groomer. Well, that's not essential. Dog groomer sold food and pet supplies. Go to the dog groomer and get your dog groomed. Countless examples of things that just didn't make very good sense occurred, and that compounds the economic problem. For example, in hospitals, not treating men for prostate cancer, women for breast cancer, surgeries was considered non-essential. If it was my wife or daughter with breast cancer, I think it's essential. And one thing we learned after 30 days, Scott, remember conversations with the hospital association executive? Really, really scared about having enough hospital beds. The governor was furious because we didn't get a hospital ship from the federal government. That they put up a field hospital at a stadium in Seattle. We never put a single person in it. The numbers after 30 days, we realized the hospitals were certainly not overwhelmed. Good example would be Pullman and Colfax. no elective surgeries, financial chaos, or empty. After 30 days, some of these things could have easily changed that would have been fairer and better for the economy.
All right. Where will wheat farmers feel the economic pinch? And really, will they feel an economic pinch?
I think we'll see it in the macroeconomics. Obviously, our ending stocks are too high. The dollar's been too strong. Crops are fairly decent looking all across America. So we're hurting from macro issues. So far, we've been spared a little bit of the pain that our friends and neighbors on Main Street have experienced. Certainly, it's not good times in wheat country, directly or indirectly.
Now, I put wheat farming at the top of my economic agenda, but as a state senator, is there a particular sector of the economy that you're holding your breath over? I mean, that you're particularly worried about?
You go up and down Main Street in any community, and you see small businesses that are just destroyed. The restaurant industry estimates that 20% of the restaurants, bars, will never reopen successfully. Those are our friends and neighbors, people that had small specialty stores. Today's spokesman review talked about a woman that had a sewing store. Not going to make it. She's going to give it up. I think the small businesses are the ones that are going to suffer the most through this.
How quickly do you think we'll emerge from the economic pain? Will it take as much as 3 years to make up for 3 months so far?
Being a farmer, Scott, I still have to be optimistic that we could have a V-shaped recovery if we get the pockets of problems under control. We're coming up with some common sense alternatives to events out there in our economy that need to move forward.
Okay. All right. There are a few state tax advantages that farmers have now. They don't pay the state fuel tax for off-road use. There are some sales tax exemptions. Do you think that those incentives will survive this moment?
I like to think they will, because agriculture overall has suffered so heavily. I probably have more potatoes grown in my legislative district than any other one. If you're a potato grower who had their contracts canceled, plowed them under, or forced to go into a highly risky open market, it's a really big industry to whack. Dairy, we look at beef. We haven't suffered as bad as they have. And you need to raise a lot of money, number of dollars that exemptions could generate probably are not worth the pain in our state's economy. Things that those that choose revenue have to consider. They want to continue down this spending course. They got to find taxes that generate a lot of money quickly and predictably. Horribles like an income tax or income tax on capital gains, a long and difficult route to get there. If you say, well, let's do a carbon tax, if you look at cap and trade, it takes a long time with no legal or political hurdles to implement those. So those that want revenue, looking for what they can do fast and predictably.
All right. Now, I've read that the Department of Transportation is going to be hit particularly hard, what with fewer people driving, meaning fewer gas taxes being collected. What does that mean on the ground?
Well, it means on the ground, we're going to have to make some very difficult choices in January. If we're losing $100 million in revenue from tolls, gas tax related. People don't start driving soon. Clearly, have to be some delays in projects or changes out there. Some, though, are just absurd. Amtrak is got 95% vacancy on their trains. Know why they're still running. Transit may have to look at actually recovering a sizable amount of their cost fares rather than a attitude of, if they don't have the change, let them on the bus. Everybody, continue the Sound Transit 7% recovery from the fare box. You need to get to a model like Pullman where the revenue actually comes from those that use it.
Mm-hmm. I've read that WSU is going through a planning process looking for 10% cuts throughout the university, about $38 million. Is that the best case or the worst case scenario?
It's the worst case scenario. I know that President Schultz has embarked on fiscal house in order before this ever came. The leadership that Elson Floyd showed in the last recession, Elson said, before I take 15% and make a great program mediocre, maybe we could do without some of the programs that we have. Sort of like a fruit tree, Scott. Once in a while, you got to prune this great quality fruit. And I think in the case of WSU, if you look at what Elson did, you see a model to move forward.
All right. I believe agriculture has proven its resilience during this pandemic. Do you think there is a way for agriculture to capitalize on the fact that we didn't let the American public down, or for that matter, our customers overseas?
Well, I think we've got a good story to tell that this has not hurt us as bad as the longshoreman slowdown did. During my time as majority leader, we had that slowdown that absolutely devastated many, many segments of agriculture, from Christmas trees to wheat and potatoes. So we've shown that we've been a reliable supplier for exports. So I think that's positive. I would say the potato industry set a really good example with their million-pound giveaway. Publicity that industry got, the goodwill they built with consumers. Giveaways were huge events, whether they were in Ritzville, Olympia, or Tacoma. They told the story, people in need, and it went very well. So I think ag has done a pretty good job. I think consumers are offended when they see milk that has to be dumped. They hear about hogs being euthanized rather than processed for the grocery stores and consumers. We've told a good story, and many, many years ago, while I was in ag forestry, my friends in the timber industry said, never quit telling the story, we'll go out of business. Our industry has to tell its story in bad times, but in good times alike. It's an ongoing campaign to tell the story of agriculture.
Yes, yes, it is. So, Mark, on another note, how are things looking at your farm? How much rain have you gotten in the last 2 months?
Well, March was driest in 10 years. I had 0.2 inches of rain in April. In the second half of May, I had 2.25 inches at my house, and I've probably had close to an inch in June. So we were really, really looking scary in May, looking at an average crop, some be a little under, some could be a little over. Spring crops would have been a complete disaster without those great rains.
How would you rate the crop now on a scale of 10?
With 5 being an average crop, I think we are a plus.
Five plus?
6 plus.
All right, 6 plus.
I think what I'm seeing in this area, the people that were able to successfully plant early have some beautiful looking crops. Those of us that were forced to reseed by multiple showers or big rains, got past that optimum planting window, and it just doesn't look as good on later plantings.
Anything else?
Every year I look forward to the field day at Lynn that I see lifelong friends and neighbors, see what's new. I'm going to really miss that. I think our culture of fairs, rodeos, youth shows, community festivals. That has really, really hurt great fabric of rural Washington. Ritzville had experience in not hosting graduation for our annual alumni banquet in 1980. About every event in Ritzville from mid-May through the July was canceled. Graduation, alumni banquet, car shows. We have just a little bit of unhappy experience there. This year, I'm afraid it's going to go longer.
Did all of you understand why Ritzville High didn't host graduation in 1980? That was the year, of course, that Mount St. Helens erupted, May 18th to be exact, and covered much of the state in a layer of ash. That was a different kind of natural disaster than the pandemic, a disaster largely confined to a thumbprint of the planet. COVID-19, on the other hand, has all of us in its strange embrace. But as my mother always said, this too shall pass. I hope you enjoyed episode 183, or what I entitled, Not Senator Mark Schessler's First Recession, about my conversation with Mark Schessler, who represents the 9th District in Washington State Senate, an area comprising one heck of a lot of wheat farmers, potato growers too. Please join me here again next week for another episode of Wheat All About It.
We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. Crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in its head. Through a history of starvation and times of want and woe, wheat has been our savior, our grub, our gruel, our dough. There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when it's not enough wheat. We feed you.